Hello, my name's Wendy Liebman. I'm the CEO and Chief Shopper of WSL Strategic Retail, and this is Future Shop. This is where I have a fast and furious chat with guests about the future of retail and what companies need to do to envision that future. Today, the topic at hand is reinventing retail relationships in the midst of a pandemic. That's a mouthful. My guest is Greg Farah. He's the CEO of ECRM, an organization that brings together retailers and manufacturers in truly efficient ways to do business. 2 decades ago, ECRM revolutionized B2B engagement, and here we are right in the middle of a pandemic, and they've done it yet again. There's much learning to be had in this conversation, so stay with us. Hello, Greg. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for inviting me to your show.
Pleasure to have you. So how are you? Where are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm in Glen Allen, Virginia, which is outside of Richmond, and it's a very nice fall day here.
That's great. As everybody can now tell, you have two Southerners on this call. I'm a little further southern than he is, but clearly, two Southerners. So take that in mind as we have this conversation. So let's begin at the beginning. Can you tell us a little bit about you and how you got to ECRM, and then we'll talk about ECRM.
I started out as my career as a commissioned officer in the United States Marine Corps, and when I decided to leave active duty, I was networking and connected this group of Marines that were running this trade show for the Marine Corps. And I vaguely knew what a trade show was, but they asked me to join. And that company became acquired by a company that became acquired by another company that ultimately became Nielsen. And so I ended up running Nielsen Business Media, all of their trade shows and publications and B2B websites. I left there in April of 2010 and joined ECRM. I did a stint with a small design product catalog, online product catalog for 3 years, and then joined ECRM in July of 2013.
That's an interesting journey from the Marines to event planning, right?
Well, it requires a lot of the same disciplines, attention to detail, and being able to have a vision and leadership as well. So,
yeah, and just generally whipping everybody into shape, which is a good thing.
Try not to do that.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about ECRM. I mean, I remember ECRM. I said 2 decades ago. That just ages me some more. But when I think about an organization that helped transform the relationship between buyers and sellers, it seemed that ECRM did that. So can you tell us a little bit about ECRM and its evolution so we kind of understand the context?
ECRM is the leading provider of business-to-business solutions for retail, food service operators, and health system buyers, and for the suppliers of consumer packaged goods, for general merchandise, food service products, medical supplies and pharmaceuticals. And our mission is to make their buying and selling processes more efficient and more effective. Now, the way that we do that is through a collection of over 80 product category focused programs that are designed to match the objectives and the requirements of the buyers with the products and capabilities of suppliers. Now, these programs are a unique combination of high touch and high tech. We have a client success management team that is highly engaged with our clients throughout the process. And they're enabled by our proprietary technologies, including RangeBee, which is our online product discovery platform with over 200,000 suppliers on the platform. And so once we've matched the buyers and sellers, we bring them together in person where they meet face to face in what we call an efficient program planning session, where they meet one to one to really assess their ability and interest to do business with each other.
Yeah, I recall when ECRM first got started, and more recently now, this extraordinary bringing together of retail buyers with manufacturers in category specific, cough and cold, cosmetics, whatever, and these one-on-one meetings that you, ECRM, organized through even 20 years ago, an amazing platform where all you had to do was put your hand up and say, I want to come, and you organized all the meetings. And that was the least of it, obviously. You aligned everybody on what do you need to get out of it, what is so it felt to me, even then, and as it's evolved in your most recent evolutions or revolutions, really, it took the complexity out of business-to-business relationships and in many ways simplified it. So I don't know if that's true, but that's my observation.
Yeah, and so when Charlie Bolis created the company back in 1994, he really revolutionized or innovated in the face-to-face meeting space. I mean, imagine creating a new type of face-to-face interaction. That's like creating a new type of fire. It's been around for thousands of years and we take it for granted, but he did that. And he also was the first to, he pioneered the use of technology to facilitate interaction and commerce between buyers and sellers. And at that time, Charlie, I think, thought of the business as an event business. But when I came on board in 2013, having really grown up in the event business, I realized, oh, there's much, much more to this than an event. So we've really been trying to reposition ourselves as a business process solutions provider ever since, and to continue to emphasize the services that we provide. A lot of the value that we create and provide to buyers and sellers is done in the weeks and the months leading up to the actual in-person meeting, in preparing the buyers, preparing the sellers, exchanging data and information and educating each other, each party on what the other is looking for. So we've become over the years much, much more of a solutions provider, and that's where we're continuing to focus on.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is, you know, sometimes people would say, well, why, if we're looking at the future of retail, which is what we do, and the strategies that help people move forward in that through a shopper lens, why is this discussion relevant to, you know, our audience? And to me, you know, we're always thinking about the shopper and the retailer or the shopper and the brand. But if the retailer and the brand don't come together, nothing gets done, you know? So...
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. And listen, the operating environment of buyers and sellers these days is as challenging as it's ever been. I mean, the proliferation of brands and products, tens of thousands or maybe hundreds of thousands of new products and brands are introduced every year. Consumers are definitely developing a preference for these niche brands. And retailers are using those niche brands to differentiate themselves from their competitors and to drive incremental revenue. So the challenge is, with all of that happening, it's an enormous challenge for buyers to determine which brands to explore. I mean, they get reaches in from products they've never heard of, have no way of discerning if they're retail ready or if it would be a good fit for them. And it's equally challenging on the other side for brands to gain the attention of buyers who have that much going on. And so that's what we've been trying to solve for the last 25 years.
Yeah. So, you know, how has the pandemic changed the relationship between brands and retailers from an ECRM point of view?
Yeah, well, solving that challenge that I just laid out has become just a bit more because everybody's working remotely, offices are closed, and buyers aren't necessarily hosting new suppliers or potential suppliers in their offices. And everybody's having to adapt to seek new ways and better ways to interact during this time period. And I think that what we've seen is that you really have to make every interaction count. So everybody's doing Zoom calls now. I mean, I think particularly with their established buyers, with their established suppliers, they're having those types of calls. But it becomes much more difficult when you're talking about the new brand trying to gain the attention of a buyer that they don't do business with. So I think every interaction has become much more critically important than it ever has before.
And it's interesting too, because when I think about, you know, how do I build, not only how do I get that information to make a decision, but how do I build trust in Absolutely. A relationship in these days? And when I can't meet at a big conference, maybe I've come with a joint, you know, or a joint business planning session, and I can't lean in and shake your hand and say hello across the room. How do I do that now? How do I think about doing that now? Seems to be a really, you know, it's a new way that we have to think about doing business.
Right. So the challenge is around gaining alignment, establishing confidence and capabilities, and establishing trust. All that has become much more difficult. So you have to adapt and seek new ways and be open to new ways of accomplishing it. But I think also, as I said, every time you have an interaction, whether you're a buyer or seller, it has to really count. And by that, I mean, there has to be a clear objective for that interaction. You know, what do you want to have accomplished by the end of it? So they have to be much more purposeful than I think they've ever had to be before. They have to be precise. They have to be succinct. I think both parties have to do more due diligence than they've probably had to do before, because it is a limited time, and it is virtual or on the phone primarily these days. So they have to be better prepared. And I think most of all, they have to be much more open and more transparent than ever before.
Yeah, yeah. So you had to flip your business model. I don't know if it's on its head, but you had to think about how to deliver what you do differently. And I think there's tremendous learning. You and I have chatted about this before. And I think there's just so much learning for businesses at large, whether it's solution providers, consulting practices like ours, or just retail operations. Can you talk about, you know, how you went about that? The sort of fast and messy, was it perfect? How did you engage your people? You know, what did you do?
Well, let me tell you our COVID story. So we initially felt the impact of COVID the first week of March. And that's when Expo West canceled, because many of the major retailers had enacted travel bans, which really prevented their people from going to Expo West. And we instantly knew at that time that those travel bans or limitations would have the same impact on our in-person planning sessions. So we reacted very, very quickly, immediately. And by Friday of that week, just a couple of days later, we had already conceptualized our first virtual offering, which we called Efficient Supplier Introductions. And these ESIs, as we call them, feature up to 10 suppliers presenting to a panel of a dozen or two dozen or more interested buyers. And at that time, as you might remember, everybody was uncertain about how long this would last or how this would move forward. And everybody was essentially hoping for a quick return to business as usual. So our initial offering was really intended as a way to provide some immediate assistance to our customers during this time period and to stay engaged with them until we got that return to business as usual. But as you know, the COVID situation continued to deteriorate. And that fact, with the overwhelming positive embrace of our customers, particularly the buyers of our ESIs, encouraged us to begin converting the rest of our business, our planning sessions, to virtual as well. So what we did was our development team worked around the clock and came up with ECRM Connect, which is our proprietary virtual communications platform. And it's designed with features and functionality to replicate the in-person experience that our customers value and are very familiar with. And then we subsequently held our first virtual session in mid-May. That's about 10 weeks or so after the cancellation of Expo West.
So let me interrupt you for a minute. I don't think people understand, or maybe they do if they know ECRM well, but you literally had... How many meetings did you run a year, which were these face-to-face, one-on-one meetings that you prepared for and organized. So coming into this, how many of those were you doing?
Yeah, well, so we did over 80 planning sessions, hundreds of thousands of one-on-one meetings.
Okay, so I'm just going to say this to the audience. Think about joint business planning, preparing for a joint business planning session with one of their customers, and maybe they've got six or seven top customers, but you're actually doing this for multiple brands and multiple retailers across categories, right? Cough and cold, antacid, cosmetics, pets.
Yes.
All of those things, right? So the complexity of this. Okay, sorry, I just wanted to ground that. Back to the ECI, whatever that was.
Yeah, and this, the great thing is that we were able to transition the face-to-face component from in-person to virtual, but it still has all the same process involved in it. Everything that we did for to prepare buyers and sellers for in-person, we're still doing virtually. Now, we learned a few things along the way, or there is a few things that we had to do that you might not think about when you first started this. We didn't. And that's with now everybody's working remotely. And just as we did at the beginning of this podcast and preparing ourselves, we have to test everybody's microphone, everybody's Wi-Fi, everybody's camera, and ensure that. And if it doesn't work for whatever reason, then we have a team of people that jump in and try to work with the client to make that happen. So just imagine now. The thousands of customers that we have, we've tested all of their setup at home as well. Our client success management team has been the unsung heroes during this whole period. They've worked harder than anybody else because the ESI responsibility fell on their shoulders immediately, and working with all the customers through getting them prepared for the virtual sessions, they've just been great.
So did you actually, so I'm thinking about this again, I have my, my consulting hat on, I suppose. So were you able to take the teams that you had, and they learned on the go and did all this or enhance what they knew? Or did you actually have to find new people to begin to move this forward fast when you realized this wasn't going to be months, this could be years?
Well, we didn't have to get new people. The beauty of our business was that we already had an in-house development team that created all of our proprietary technologies and tools that we use. We already had the client success management team in place. And so it was a matter of creating the platform. And then again, as I said, it's the same process. The only thing that was different was the onboarding or the preparation of the participants for the virtual experience, and then monitoring what we call the dashboards. We have this dashboard where you can see the status of every single meeting. And, what we're hoping for always is a panel of nothing but green lights. But as soon as a red one pops in, then our CS team has to pop in there. That was one of the things that was different, but all the same people, all the same process.
What have you learned in terms of what do clients or retailers and manufacturers want now as they, what are their needs, not just through ECRM, but what's emerged as what they're looking for now as they build relationships and grow businesses in this continuing COVID world and as they move out of it?
That's a very good question. I think it's largely the same. Work still has to go on. Buyers still, and category managers still have to manage their categories. Suppliers still have to sell their products. So all of the same, everybody still has the same objectives they've had before. It's just learning how to do it in this new virtual world. The thing that I think that has been more difficult is, again, discovering and evaluating new suppliers and new relationships.
There seem to also be two things that I'm conscious of. One is that in some ways, as the world closed down, the world also opened up through what you were able to do, because people who maybe couldn't bring so many people to one of your one-on-one meetings, in-person meetings, now could bring more. So that was one thing that struck me as I sort of looked at how you'd evolved. The other was the world, literally the world, the global, you know, now people could have access to, because people may not know this, you have a global business too. So now I, sitting in my chair in Manhattan, could actually have a conversation with somebody in, you know, Guangzhou or in London because of what you did. So it felt like things closed and opened at the same time. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can. So you're absolutely dead on with the comment about we can have more people involved in these discussions than we've ever had before. You know, we've had well over a dozen representing, you know, on the supplier side or on the buyer side, as more and more people are involved in those meetings, which they couldn't be before because of the travel requirement and those sorts of things, limiting that. So that's definitely been something that we've seen, and we're happy to accommodate that. And in terms of the rest of the world, I have some interesting statistics here. So we've done 70 virtual sessions since May. We've had 65,000 meetings that we've curated with 2,400 unique suppliers, 2,600 unique buyers, representing about 823 unique retailers. 86 countries have been represented. Every continent other than Antarctica has participated in our sessions.
No penguins interested or something?
No penguins. And so that it has in many instances or in that way opened up the world. It's what virtual has done is it's uncoupled the requirement around space and time, where we used to have to bring everybody together at one time in one place.
And we've seen that. We do our retail safaris that actually we've done with ECRM in live time in Chicago. And now we do those virtually. And we do them around the world because we have our teams, our scouts around the world who they can't travel and we can't travel, but they can travel and send it to us. And, you know, we then present it, which we just did at a meeting last week. And it was wonderful to be in London and look at Selfridges and what they were doing around sustainability, or in Tokyo to look at a new Shiseido store, or even in Queens, New York, where we looked at a whole new Mac lab kind of thing. And I realized that, yes, of course, we would have and could have done those, you know, in another life. But it's forced us to figure, you know, new ways to deliver what our customers can't get right now. All those people who would, you know, go to China or go to Europe. We'll continue our conversation with Greg in just a moment, but I just wanted to remind you that we have many resources on this topic available on our website. We've got our How America Shops research, our most recent around how the world is opening up at retail as a result of COVID, our latest report on the big business of well and how wellness is changing as we move through this pandemic, trend alerts, our weekly What's Up at WSL with latest insights. So just remember, lots of resources for you as you continue to do your business, all available at www.wslstrategicretail.com. So now let's get back to the chat with Greg.
What virtual has done is it's uncoupled the requirement around space and time, where we used to have to bring everybody together at one time in one place. If a buyer wants to do their have their session at a time that's different than the main session, we can accommodate that very easily now. If more people want to come, we can accommodate that very easily, much more easily. So that's been the beauty of virtual. And it's also allowed us to be much more granular than we've ever been able to be before. So if there's a niche category that just not that many suppliers are into, we can now accommodate them. You know, whereas before it might not have been that attractive for them or the buyers to travel to meet. Now we can just do it virtually online. And the feedback that we're getting from buyers and sellers both is that they appreciate not only the convenience of the virtual experience, but also the quality of the interactions that they're having. And so we've seen a couple of really unique things going on. One is that buyers are following up much faster than they ever did. And I think it's because they don't have to worry about sticking around for another couple of days, traveling, getting back to the office, catching up on all their emails, digging out, and then thinking about follow-up. And a large number of the follow-up that we're tracking through our system is occurring, 56% of it, the buyers are requesting in 1 to 2 weeks. So a large number of it is almost immediate, which is neat. Also, you can request samples, and if buyer wants samples ahead of time, we can send samples to that buyer, but they also have the ability to request samples through our platform. It's interesting because I think the quality of the interaction has increased. It used to be the product was the center of the discussion. It was pick it up, see how heavy it is, see how light it is, smell it, taste it, rub it on your skin. And the product still plays a starring role. But I think that it actually allows buyers and sellers to really talk about doing business with each other and what their objectives and requirements are and what their capabilities are. And so we've seen, I think we've seen anecdotally an increase in the quality of the interaction as well between buyers and sellers.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say all that, because I remember I saw you across the virtual world a few weeks ago when we sponsored and helped moderate Industry Day that the Emerson Group had done. And what struck me about that, for those of you who were there or not, was thousands of people came together, retailers and manufacturers, in a virtual world. We were in a studio, which was nice for the three or four of us socially distanced. There was a wall of people. Greg was one of them. It's like, oh, look, I know him. But really what made the difference in that, we were able to get such an amazing quality of attendees, not just in manufacturers, but retailers. I moderated a panel called The Joy and Power of Retail, which had, you know, Walmart, Kroger, Rite Aid, senior executives talking about their collaborations. We had, you know, an extraordinary group of people, CEOs from CVS and Walgreens and all of this, that HEB, that we know we wouldn't have been able to have otherwise, because it would have been a day or two out of their schedules. The coordination would have been ridiculous. Now, to your point, all we had to do, if they had a firewall, was make sure they were working from home, not their office, so we could actually have this sort of conversation. But it struck me exactly what you were saying, that ability to bring people together in ways that they wouldn't have come otherwise, but also to have quite an intimate conversation, and then to have your audience on this amazing wall. In your case, you're one-on-one. Here we had, you know, hundreds of people. It was like a sporting event. And it was fabulous because you could say, oh, I know that person. I know that person. It was really, you know, waving to the crowd. It was, so it really is interesting, right? What we've learned in all of this. So what do you think, whether they're big companies or small companies, you deal with both, and big retailers and small, what sticks through this? What do you anticipate will stay? And what are we missing here? I mean, what do we long for? It's kind of the shopper discussion, right?
Everything that you said previously about the Emerson Industry Day, you know, is the same experience we've had. The flexibility that virtual offers is really compelling, particularly among buyers, and buyers from major retailers. We're seeing a 20% increase in engagements with those kinds of buyers versus when we did things in person. So that is the virtual, the convenience of it, the quality of the experience is definitely resonating with them. I think at Industry Day, we had a buyer from one of those major retailers. When they were asked that very same question, one of the things that they said was, probably less travel is going to be in the future. Hard to know. I just don't know. And it's so unclear as to when that will even be feasible again. I think that virtual is definitely going to continue to be the lion's share of our service offering. There are some, and in person will take on a different meaning, I think. I think, you know, when you think about the three phases of the buying and selling process, the discovery, the evaluation, and the follow-up, discovery and evaluation can certainly be advanced quite a bit virtually. And perhaps in person will be reserved more for the finalists, if you will, to meet with buyers in their offices or at other locations just before the decision is made. So I think that virtual is definitely here to stay, and will continue to, it'll continue to be a mainstay of our offering.
You know, one of the things that struck me is, and we've seen it in all our How America Shops research, how as in spite of consumers as shoppers very focused on things like safety and security and efficiency and, you know, toilet paper and whatever, there is still this great interest in discovery. And part of it is because they've had to discover new brands because things have been out of stock. And part of it is because they had some time or they were learning to shop online and they discovered things. And you alluded to discovery, both from a retailer standpoint in terms of differentiation and things, but also there is a shopper desire still at this moment in new, whether it's in categories like immunity or, you know, pet care or education or so many things, just comfortable office chairs, right? Work chairs. So with RangeMe and some of your, I don't mean this is a selling pitch, but it just seems to me we shouldn't think that opportunity has gone away as we're all just doing efficient, filling up the shelves with basics.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up RangeMe. So since March, buyers and sellers are turning more and more to our services for discovery and for that interaction to facilitate that interaction. You can do searches. We have collections that are curated on RangeMe. You can follow up with buyers any way or suppliers any way you want. Yeah, that discovery piece, you know, new suppliers, new types of products has been, it's been a bit more challenging during this period. And the usual or traditional ways of sort of engaging with those types of suppliers have been changed at least temporarily. So we're definitely seeing a lot more buyer interest in discovering new products and new suppliers.
And I do think about sort of the unintended consequences of this, right? And the ability, and again, I look through everything, of course, through a shopper lens, and you know, but it's that, you know, and I think about what the needs of the retailers are in that, you know, again, and the brands, this sort of sense of the things you've talked about, you know, efficiency, ability to make decisions quickly, of discovery, of building trust. All of those are sort of attributes that, you know, when I look at our shopper research, we hear. And it applies so much to the broader world that we're now living in. That's not really a question for you. It's just a sort of commentary. I think it is interesting to see how that all works. So as I think about this and I, you know, sort of step back in terms of this world that we're living in now, it feels to me from what you've said that there are a lot of things here that will continue to work moving forward. And what strikes me is two things you've said. One is you talked about the ability to recognize two weeks in advance of everything shutting down that you're going to need to react to something. So I think about what are you going to look at now as kind of a marker of the next shift? How do you keep an eye on that? I mean, that's what we do, retail futurists, right? What are you doing to sort of think, when's the next shift coming?
We've done lots of things and we've learned lots of lessons during this time period where we had to react in such a big, profound way. And the guiding principles that we followed during this time, there were really three. And one, and most important, was staying focused on the customer. And trying to understand how their wants and needs were changing, how their process was changing, and you know where they needed help. And it wasn't about what we wanted, you know, because we wanted things to stay the same. But you know that wasn't our choice. It's about what they wanted, and trying to anticipate the best we can, but to stay really focused on them. We increase the level of communication with them. Wayne Bennett, who you know, who runs our retail development team, was in constant and still is in constant contact with the leadership. And I think it really paid off. The other thing that was very important was setting aside all of our orthodoxies. So everything we believed, everything we held dear, everything we were willing to fight for, all of that had to go on the table because it was all subject to change. And you had to be open to change. And in some ways, you had to begin to seek change because things were changing all around us. To imagine that we couldn't change our business in response to that was just unrealistic. But it was so uncertain. And if you remember at the time, we called it COVID time. You wake up in the morning believing one thing, but by the end of the day, you believe something just the opposite. And so we just became, interestingly enough, very comfortable with the uncertainty. You had to embrace it because if you tried to fight it, you would go crazy or become paralyzed. So we just went with it. And related to that, the third thing was, bold action, placing smart risks, not doing anything, without some reason or just because we wanted something to change or, we changed something, but doing it for what we believed was a good reason, even though there was incomplete information and it was all unprecedented. So you were, to an extent, in a lot of cases, taking a little bit of a leap of faith, but you'd have to trust your people. We have great people and they were giving me some very good advice, and it was easier to make those decisions when we have that sort of insight into our customers' wants and needs.
Just to wrap up, when we're doing our workshopping at the end, we do what we call SNAP. So here's the SNAP. Three questions. Very quick.
Okay.
So what worked best? What was the best thing that's happened through this? One thing.
The way our client success management team stepped up and really showed what is most valuable about what we do. It was what the services they provide. It wasn't the in-person or virtual format. It's the process that makes the difference.
Okay. So it didn't matter whether we were locked down or out and about. It was that process. Yeah. Okay. Snap number two. What worked least? Oh, come on. You can tell us.
Oh, what worked least? So many things. I think it was hard remotely with everybody working remotely to, if we would all been in person to implement that degree of change would have been far easier. But doing it remotely and trying to convey why we're doing something and why, how it's going to be done, very, very difficult because it's just that much more challenging remotely.
Yeah. Okay. And last, SNAP, what was the biggest surprise so far?
The biggest surprise so far, I think in just how open everybody has been to the change in doing things and to adopting virtual. Was this accelerated things that were already underway? And that's definitely been the case in how quickly we've been able to do so many things that before seemed very hard.
Well, thank you for that. You have really shared a story, which I think is really relevant because the lens that you have is this relationship, this business-to-business relationship that without this working in any form doesn't get the right product at the right price in the right place at the right time to satisfy the shopper. So I was so keen to hear the story of how you've evolved this business and this amazing team you have. So I thank you for all of this.
Thank you. It's been my honor and privilege. Thank you so much.
So here's the thing. One of the things that's so foundational in us moving forward and thinking about the future of retail is how we interact with our customers, our shoppers, our brands, and our retailers. And what Greg was able to share with us is how his company, his organization, which is a hugely complex one, was able to facilitate that relationship. He talked about how to make every interaction count. And I think for all of us now, as we talk across the ether, that becomes really important. The purposefulness of which we come to our meetings, whether it's our own Zoom calls in the morning or whether it's our client Zoom calls as we go through the day. The other thing he talked about was people, of course, and, you know, the ability for teams to not only stand up and respond, but the ability for them to challenge the accepted norms and encourage teams to do that. He also used an amazing expression, which I just absolutely loved, which was being uncoupled from space and time, uncoupled from space and time, which does talk to extraordinary opportunities. As the world closed down, it also opened up. And I think he just captured in his last three things of what they've learned, something that we can all think about. One was he talked about their success through this is being focused on customers and understanding their needs, and whether that customer is a shopper or whether it's a retailer or whether it's a manufacturer, that staying focused all the time on the customer really enables success. The second thing he said was set aside the orthodoxy, challenge everything, seek change. And that's a, you know, when we're trying to sort of hold on to what was, that becomes a very powerful guiding light to the future. And third, he said, you know, take bold actions, you know, take smart risks. We don't know what's going to happen, but if we've got the right people in the right places, then we can do that. And I think that really told the whole story of how we need to build relationships and grow as we think about what retail looks like in the future. So that's the theme. Thank you all for joining me today. See you in the future.
Just a reminder, the content of this podcast is the product of WSL Strategic Retail. You can't reproduce it or repurpose it without asking us, without written consent. So don't forget that. Copyright WSL Marketing Inc. 2020.